the show is going to start.
Blog Talk Radio.
Sometimes you can work it out. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you're forced to watch everything fall apart inside of your hands. Sometimes leaving is easy. Sometimes it ain't. Sometimes it hurts to know the loving you had is slowly fading away.
Welcome to Delicious Talk. And my co-host Rhea's on the line. Are you there, hon?
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Now, what about this government shutdown? Isn't that a mess?
Girl, that's beyond a mess. I had a conversation Wednesday with a federal worker, actually a federal disabilities lawyer. And literally they have completely packed up their office and won't know, I don't know how they're going to be notified, but like as of noon today, they're considered themselves shut down. And unfortunately, that's going to task a whole lot. My daughter is a program assistant for international programs at a major law school here. And they have an international program that starts next week. And guess what?
What?
There's no passport stuff.
Oh,
and people can't come
God.
Into this country.
That's pitiful.
I'm like,
my
wow.
Right. My grandson's in the service. And, you know, they're not getting paid. But the bank, the bank that does the a bank is going to pay them personally. So the government
really?
Doesn't have anything to do. Yeah.
Do they have to go a week without pay and then they get half of their pay? But it's only
I don't
X
know
amount
how
of time and
work.
Then they go to none.
Oh, I don't know how it's going to work, but the banks that they have their money in or whatever it is going to pay them. But,
okay.
You know, it's just a shame, you know, that it had to come to this, you know, and people, and a sad part about it is that they don't even know when they'll be called back to work.
Man, this ain't nothing but a bunch of people jockeying for the top spot. Okay.
Yeah, a bunch. It's just greed.
They get
you
on
know,
my nerves.
All the
it's like
greed.
They conceded. They conceded. The Democrats conceded and gave them what they asked for, and then all of a sudden, in the 11th hour, you gonna up to ante and try
yeah.
to strong arm somebody? Come on now.
Yeah. Well, we have a very exciting show this evening. We have
I'm looking
a very
forward
special.
To it.
Yes, I am too. You know, especially the guest, I.B. Freeman. I'm gonna give a little bit of background on Mr. Freeman before we bring him on the line. He's the author of a controversial novel, Mr. HIV, and he's also the host of the I.B. Freeman Show, and proud lifetime resident of the Bronx, New York. 32-year-old writer and blogger, and his debut novel is the critically acclaimed Mr. HIV. He is also a self-taught pianist and social activist. And I understand that he's working on a second novel. Do you know the title of that novel, or we need to ask him?
I believe it's Can I Live?
Oh, okay. I think that is
it.
That sounds interesting.
I live?
Okay.
So he's given us a little bit of information about it before today. He gave us a little bit more today. When I say us, the people that's on his page, and it does sound interesting. And I'm one of the people who like I like stories about people. You know what I'm saying? Things
right.
such as that. So, and this is going to seem like it's going to take that turn.
Okay. Well then, I think without further ado, we need to bring Mr. Freeman in. Let's see if this is I.B. Freeman, are you there?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, and yourself?
I'm doing just wonderful. I can't complain at all.
Okay, that's good. Can you let us all know a little bit about you, you know, growing up and how you got to writing and, you know, what you're into?
Well, I mean, well, growing up, I was always kind of a nerd, and I always liked to read and get information. And I think just reading as an adult, because I read a lot, because since it was a childhood habit, it became a habit as an adult. So I just ended up reading so much till someone suggested that I write a book, and that just kind of led to me writing Mr. HIV, because I read so many fiction books, and when you read a lot of fiction and you really take time to analyze it, you can then put out a decent book yourself based on what you've read.
Right, that's true. So, now you said a friend had inspired you because you had read so many books is why you wrote the book.
Right, so when I known they had always seen me with a different book every week, always reading so much, and they said, well, you read so much, why don't you write one? And I just kind of took it and ran with it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's quite interesting, you know, because a lot of people I hear, they write when someone dares them to write, or they write because they went through something. You know, it's always a little story behind when a person, you know, writes something. And that's a good thing, because I'm also an author as well. And well, we're not going to get into my story, because tonight it's all about you. And Rhea, I'm going to let you handle this, you know, because you basically read the book, and then I'll, you know, come in with some questions that I may have for him.
Okay. Can I do this? No, okay. Hi, B, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing just fine, thank you. First of all, tell us about a little bit about your book.
Well, the book is about a man named Darren Wade. He's approximately 30 years old. Physically, I painted him to be tall, dark, and handsome, because apparently that's what women like nowadays. And he's single, no kids, and he's heterosexual and successful. And he's HIV positive and infecting women on purpose.
Wow.
That's
okay.
Kind of the gist of him right there. You know, I try to make him look very perfect and desirable, even though he's a murderer. It's a situation where it's a character you wouldn't believe he's doing that. And that's how it usually is with serial killers. Serial killers are usually the people you would never expect to be serial killers. And I think most people wouldn't expect a professional, handsome man to go out there and kill women on purpose. So that adds a little irony to the book. For as far as the character, it makes him a little more interesting.
Oh, that's interesting. I like the way you term that.
Right. What inspired you to write a story specifically, your first book, about this, HIV?
Well, I felt like for the first book, to be honest, there's a lot of people who write books. So I think when you first come out, you got to have something that really stands out from the rest. So
right.
I never heard of a book with this kind of plot. So that was number one. It just made me stand. It would make the book stand out. Plus, I knew someone who worked in the field of HIV, and they had clients who were doing that, going around infecting people on purpose. And I even knew someone in my neighborhood who was going around infecting guys on purpose. So it happened quite a bit, and I felt like this is a hot, catchy story. Let me write about it. And some people, you know, they might get into it because it actually happens, even though it's a fiction book.
Mm-hmm.
That was my way of thinking, you know. So it's actually reality when you think about it, even though it's fiction, and that makes it a little
right.
more interesting, because it's something that can really happen to people, and it makes people think, like, wow, you know, that person I dated before, I wonder if they was trying to give me something on purpose.
Mm-hmm. So how many characters are in the book?
It's the main character, I would say maybe about six. You know, because he has
okay.
a very tight relationship with his mother. And
mm-hmm.
I think that was important, too, to show that even though he's a sweet guy, he's still an angry murderer.
Right.
Then you have the best friends, the doctors, and the therapists he deals with. So maybe about four or five, maybe six at the most. But I didn't want to put too many characters in the book. I wanted to make it more about the main character.
Right. So how did you come about these characters, and what roles does his best friend play in it, and how do you get to the therapist, and you know, just give me a little background on the main character.
Well,
how you came up with him.
Well, as far as the main character, I kind of based it on myself, far as, like, you know, I at one time in my life I would have said I was a very vindictive person. You know, I can be kind of bold sometimes if I want to. So I would say the character is kind of based on me, not to say that I would murder someone.
Right.
But if I wanted to, if I was that angry and spiteful, I, you know, certain things that I would do, I kind of put that in the book. So I kind of based the character on myself to make it a little more realistic. It's an actual person that you're reading about. Not to say that I'm HIV positive and infecting people on purpose. But
right.
the character is just a certain side of me, the main character that is. And as far as any character in my book, each character in the book is kind of based off someone I actually know. For me personally, that makes it easier as a writer when you base a character on someone you know. It gives the book more credibility. And plus, it's easier to write for a character if they're based on someone else. It's like if I write a character based on Rhea, you know, I know how Rhea is, so I can write a well character about her and it will make sense. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, I understand. Now this character, is he in a relationship, or he was in a relationship and this had caused him to spiral out of control when he found out he was HIV positive, or, you know, what's going on with that? How did he come about to get the virus?
Well, basically, he was a single man who was just being a dog. You know, he says it himself in the book. So he was just out there doing whatever and not caring, and that's pretty much how it came upon him. You know, just being a basic human, you know, just going out there having unprotected sex recklessly and not really caring. And I think that's the way that it can happen with a lot of people. I mean, I think most people, I would assume they'll catch it while they're single out there just doing their thing. So that's, he kind of caught it the way most people, unfortunately, do catch it. You know, it wasn't no cheating or no, he wasn't gay or nothing like that.
Okay. Okay. Rhea, you had a question?
Yes. One of the things that I was impressed with, beyond the story being told in a way that it's a story, was some of the lessons in the story. How long did it take you to research the details in your book? Because in looking at it, it looks like you did a substantial amount of research.
Well, it took a while with the research because I've never been a science kind of person. So, you know, when I'm reading things about HIV, it's really all foreign to me. And, you know, a lot of the websites are very technical and they use the big medical words, and I couldn't understand that. But then I was fortunate enough to find a website like thebody.com. Now, with thebody.com, they have doctors on call 24 hours. These are HIV doctors. And you can email them a question, and they'll answer it for you. So that made it a little easier. So it took quite a while because I had a lot of questions, and it was a lot of stuff to figure out because HIV, it has a whole bunch of different terms associated with it, and it has a lot of different patterns with it. So there's no exact science to HIV. So I took most of the general information I could and had it confirmed by doctors and then put it in the book. But it took a while because you have to kind of dissect everything.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of got that. There was a lot of information in there, and I was like, oh, wow. I found that very interesting. Well, do you happen to have an excerpt from your book that you would like to share with us?
Oh, I'm sorry, I don't have one right now. I mean, we could have did like a play, you know, like two actors if I knew you wanted me to do that, but I didn't know, so I don't have one available at the moment.
Okay. Okay. What other things, let's change directions right quick. What other things are you involved in?
Well, I mean, my main thing is the blogging and the blog talk radio thing, because I feel like that's the best way to spread the word about HIV. I have become more of an HIV activist because I speak on it more than I ever have before, and I do it genuinely. So, you know, I'm more or less, I'm very into promoting things over the internet and over the blog talk radio, because over the internet and radio, you can reach a much larger audience that you couldn't reach before. And I think that's more important. I think getting on the internet and going out there and reaching people across the country is better than just reaching the people in the community. Sometimes you want to reach people outside of your community, and the internet is the one place that gives you the chance to do that. So that's what I'm really more into, especially when I find out about, you know, HIV testing and free testing at certain places. If someone gives me a link for it, I'll post it on Facebook. Or, you know, at one time I was posting for job fairs in certain cities like Baltimore and Atlanta because a lot of people from my page are down there. So I mainly try to help people over the internet by promoting certain things that are in their community that they might not even know about that are there.
Okay. As far as diversity, have you found that your book is, let's say, interesting to a variety of people?
Oh, yeah, because I've had white people read my book and tell me that they enjoyed it. You know, Hispanic people have read my book and told me they enjoyed it. And I think that the book is very, it's very universal because it's a subject that anyone can go through. And HIV affects people of many races. So I think it's something that everybody can relate to and everyone can understand. So it's not just like a quote-unquote hood book, because with a hood book, somebody who's not from the hood may not understand what's in the book. But people from all different types of backgrounds have to deal with HIV. So regardless of their race, this could be something that can grab their attention and, you know, throughout the book. You understand?
Okay, okay, okay. What about other levels, whether it's economic, class, or things such as that? How widespread have you saw that your audience is?
That's a pretty good question. I don't know on class, because I can't really say. I don't know how much money the people have who buy my book, but I do see that I do know that there are people on my Facebook page who make good money and have good jobs who have bought my book. I know there are people who are quote-unquote ghetto who have bought my book. So, I mean, I put it like this. It don't matter whether you work at McDonald's or whether you're a professional teacher. My audience goes from that range. So I don't think it has any effect far as the classism. It just goes amongst everyone. Because they're even, you know, they're wealthy people who have lost friends to HIV. So that's something else they would be interested in reading about. Once again, that's just an example. It affects people of all walks of life.
Would you say that it affects males more than females, or the gay community, or is it just widespread like that?
Well, I think it affects the gay community a bit because the easiest way, from what I've read, the easiest way to transmit HIV is through anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
So for the gay community, you know, that's the way they do it. So I think it's very big in the gay community. And I think for women, it can affect them more because, how can I put this? The woman's sexual parts are warm, and the diseases can live in that area for quite some time.
Right.
You know, so whereas a man can just go to the bathroom and wash himself off, the woman has this disease living within her, and it can grow and attach to her T-cells, and it just starts from there. So it affects women more because of the, I would say with the vagina, I hope I can say that on here, the vagina is a warm area, and then once the germs go in there, they can live in there for a while.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. How long does it take for a person becomes HIV positive, how long does it take before developing to AIDS, or to do they get to that point, or do some people just suffer with the HIV part of it?
As far as of now, everyone at some point gets AIDS, so everyone with HIV develops AIDS. But from what I've heard, there are people who've had it for 20, 25 years and don't have AIDS yet. I remember I was doing an interview and a woman said she had it for 20 years and she took an HIV test, it would probably come up negative because her count is that low, it's undetected. So you can live 20 years with HIV and have a very small amount of it in your body. So I think 20 years is almost normal now before people develop AIDS, or some people maybe 25 years. But it all depends on your doctor, too, and the medicine that they're giving you and the pattern of HIV in your body. Because some people can develop it as little as 7 years if they don't take their medicine properly. But if other people take medicine properly and see their doctor, they can live at least 25 years before they even develop AIDS. So it all ranges from anywhere from 5 to 25, depending on your body, the medicine you're taking, and a doctor you have.
Okay, so a person who has the virus and they're, you know, they want to, you know, continue to have sex and they're using protection, how confident can a person be, you know, if this person has a condom but they know they have HIV, is it suggested that they maybe should use two condoms, or, you know, because condoms are susceptible to break, depending on the type of lubricant you use, it can cause a condom to break. So what are the criteria for that? Especially,
well, I would say I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go on, I'm sorry. No, go on.
I was going to say don't use two condoms during sex because a lot of people don't know if you use two condoms at the same time, you're actually taking away space and creating more pressure on the condoms. So by using two condoms at the same time, they're more than likely both going to break.
Oh, okay.
Well, I would say, you know, just get the proper size condom and use basic lubrication and just be conscientious of the condom popping. I mean, we do know, most of us do know when a condom does pop, you know, so just be, you know, conscientious. And I hear stories of guys not using the right size condoms, and that creates problems. And I think that all could be prevented if guys just put on the condoms that fit them.
Mm-hmm. Now, the virus is in the semen. So if a guy doesn't use a condom and he pulls out before he ejaculates, what are the chances of him spreading that disease to his partner?
Now, based on what I've read, you can still pass it to someone even if you don't ejaculate inside of them because, you know, men still have, I guess you call it pre-cum or pre-sperm.
Oh, okay, the secretions, okay.
Right, and that can
wow.
still get in a woman's vagina and affect her, so you don't necessarily have to ejaculate inside of a woman in order to give her fluids. Fluids are already coming out before you even ejaculate.
Mm-mm-mm. So you said there were different spectrums to the virus. Now, a person who is infected, what kind of symptoms do they have?
Well, first of all, though, they might not have any symptoms. But then the other symptoms, the symptoms that they might have are any symptoms of any basic human cold, you know, coughing, weight loss, vomiting. I think those are the main symptoms right there. And that becomes a problem because since most of the symptoms of HIV are associated with the common cold, a person might have those symptoms of HIV and think, oh, I just got the common cold and that's it.
Right.
You know,
right.
And then there's some people who say that technically there's no symptoms for HIV, there's only symptoms for AIDS. So even that can
okay.
be disputed.
Are there different symptoms for AIDS and HIV? And what are the, if they are different symptoms, what are the symptoms when you have the AIDS, when the virus is full-blown?
I think one of the only symptom I could think of when you have AIDS that really stands out is the cancerous warts.
Oh, okay, the skin coloring changing, yeah.
Right.
Oh,
people
okay.
with HIV, their skin don't change, but once you have AIDS, then the cancer starts to develop.
Right, and also I noticed people with AIDS, the texture of their hair changes, and they get these lesions on them.
And, you know, that's weird.
That.
Because I know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I've met someone who said their brother had HIV, and when she told him, hey, your hair's changing, it's getting straight, I wish my hair could get like that, he got mad. And then it turned out his hair was only changing because of the HIV.
Right, right, because I had seen an old friend I hadn't seen in years, and they look, you know, but you can't always look at a person and know or tell that they have, you know, a disease. But, you know, I know that his hair had changed. And, well, he died, so I did understand that he did have the virus. So what makes it that your hair changes when you have the virus? What causes that?
Well, I don't even know because I don't think any scientists have really approached that as of yet, or I haven't seen any articles on that. I would just say maybe it's the medicine that causes them to change. I can't even say for sure.
Okay. Well, let me let everybody know this is the Delicious Talk Show, and my special guest this evening is I.B. Freeman. If you have any questions or comments, the call-in number is 646-652-2877. And we do have someone on the line who's had their hand up, and I'm going to bring them in. Caller 678, you're on the line. You have a question or comment for I.B. Freeman?
Hey, Delish. Hey, Rhea. Hey, I.B. It's Lisa.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I wanna talk back on that subject because I watched my cousin. I came down to Atlanta 3 years ago, and my cousin was fine. And I went back home for Christmas, and she went from 320 pounds to literally less than me, and I'm 125. And I looked at her, I said, what the hell is wrong with you? Why is you not eating? What is wrong with you? She wouldn't tell me. So then I see all the bottles of medicine on Aunt Geraldine's table, and I said, what is this for? And she just looked at me, and she wouldn't tell me. I said, somebody better tell me something. So, needless to say, she had AIDS. She got it from her baby father, her baby daddy, of 11 years. She never cheated on him. Three kids. She was 31 years old. She died. She died from it. He gave it to her. And he had enough nerve to walk into the funeral home. And it was all Noor could do was to keep me and pull me back from hurting him, from seriously hurting him, because I'm looking at my cousin dead in a casket. I got these kids now, and what he walking around, he's okay. What kind of shit is that?
Wow.
And you know, the sad part, he probably knew that he had it and gave it to her, but
didn't
tell
her.
And he probably started taking medicine before she did. So her body, unfortunately, deteriorated, and he just kept taking his medicine, and that's why he's living now.
Yeah, well, he ain't going to be living much longer. Trust and believe if I got anything to say about it.
Oh, no one mentioned nothing up here now. Whoa.
look. You know how I come. I come hard correcting the truth. But for real, Ibi, when I saw the title of your book, I was just like, oh, wow. Like, for real, somebody else is writing about this. Like, somebody is writing about somebody that gets it. And they don't have it, and they're not doing out there anything. Like, I'm in Hot Atlanta. You already know. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy how many people have it and just get. I will never forget when one of my people hit me up on my phone when they got out the airport. I was like, what is wrong with you? They said, Lisa. I said, what? They said, my ex-husband just handed me, I got delivered on the plane at the airport. He delivered her a box of roses and told her don't open it until she get on the plane. And she got on the plane, and it was a black rose, and he said, welcome to the world of AIDS.
Oh, my God.
What kind of shit is that? I'm sorry.
That happened
bad.
A lot, too. That happened in Delaware, I think, at a college. A woman had sex with a bunch of dudes in a dorm. And then the next day she told all of them that she had AIDS.
Why would you do that? But why would you go out there and do that? If you've got something that's got you conflicted, that's one thing. You call somebody. Call me. Shit. I'll talk to you all night long. You already know I be how I do. Rhea know how I do. Delish know how I do. But I'm trying to say, why would you do that to somebody else?
I think it's because the person is angry and, you know, wants to get back at somebody, so that's their way of getting revenge, just spread it to as many people as they can, which is a sad thing because, you know, what you need to do is go get help for as long as the life that they're going to give you on this medication. And, you know, revenge is out the door because you don't, basically, especially if you're messing around with multiple people, you don't know who gave it to you. Then once you find out that you have it, the best thing that you can do is to go get help and to contact those people that you had sex with as well. So, you know, the only thing I can think of is because people are, you know, just angry and, you know, want to lash out at somebody. They want somebody to feel their pain, feel their hurt, and to, you know, go through what they're going through, which is not good at all. And something I want to know also, I'd be, can a person just be a carrier of the virus?
That was my question.
Ooh, can they just carry it in some and not infect people, so to speak?
Right, just harbor it in their body.
That can happen. You know, there are times where if I interviewed a woman who's HIV positive, and she was saying that her and her boyfriend, he knows, and they have had unprotected sex.
Mm-hmm.
And she said as long as she's taking her medicine and her HIV count is down, the chances of her giving it to him are less.
Okay.
So you can't just be a carrier at times. Or there have been times where, you know, a husband might have had it, but his wife never caught it.
Right.
So that does happen at times. Those are what you call miracles.
Yeah, because that's what happened with, what's the basketball player's name? Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson.
Magic, yep. And
right.
Guess what? This is why I don't have sex for months and months and months. I got a shower massage. Fuck that. Straight up. I'm not trying to put myself out there. I don't care. Like, I'm not even trying to be with nobody because I'm married to Facebook. Everybody knows that. But when it comes to, like, I look at the little girls out here that are just laying down with anybody. Anybody.
Yeah.
They just lay down because they want that child support check. But that's another story for another show. But for real, these girls don't know. These men don't know. They just be messing with anybody. Anybody and anything that walks. With the, like, come on. Like, I get so mad. And this is why we have Listen to Rob's show on Wednesday night, that the streets don't love you back, because so much stuff goes on. And people don't understand. They really don't understand. And these kids nowadays, this is the problem. The kids nowadays is just straight not thinking. They're 12, 13, 14 years old down in the South. Come on now.
And a lot of people think that it can't happen to teenagers, and that's why teenagers are catching it at a faster rate. People don't realize teenagers do catch HIV, and they don't talk to them about it.
Exactly.
And
they
older
talk
people
out,
are, too.
Oh,
yeah,
there's a new report saying that a lot of women, a lot of people over 50 are catching it now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because are the women who have been, you know, people who have either lost their husbands or, you know, been in long relationships and, you know, went celibate for a while, then they decide they want to get back in the dating scene, they get back in it, and, it's, you know, they get in back into it with the wrong people. So basically, you know, you have to be careful. And I use protection regardless, and I'm not going to stop because, number one, I don't want to take no chances, you know, even though I'm only dealing with one person, but who's to say what he's doing? So I basically am looking out for myself because I don't want to, you know, I that's just one thing that I really don't want to be consumed with, is HIV.
Hell no. We ain't getting it.
You know, a thing like I would like to say to all these youngsters out here having sex and thinking it's cool and thinking it's cute and think it's a thing to do, you better think twice. Because that's
more than twice.
You can't erase.
They better think more than twice.
Well,
they better not
even
think.
Make sure you do it right. That's all I got. You know, I don't think to tell people not to have sex could work. I just say if you're going to do it, just make sure you protect yourself.
Okay,
right,
but I be like you said with the condoms. They think if they put two on, that's going to work. No, straight ain't going to work because, like you said, they're going to bust.
Mm-hmm. And then it depends on even a single condom can bust depending on the lubrication that you use, you know, because some lubrications don't go with different condoms. And if that condom bursts, and sometimes the man can tell when it has burst, and sometimes they can't. So if it bursts and, you know, things happen, that's all she wrote. And then they have the female condoms as well. So,
a lot of women,
you know,
have complained and said that those are very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I'd rather be uncomfortable for a few minutes than to be for the rest of my life. So maybe they just have to get used to wearing them or whatever. Yeah,
but
because that's something that you can deal with better than having to take medication every day for the rest of your life, just waiting for that day to come when you are just going to expire. So
exactly.
I would take take those few minutes of uncomfortableness for that.
They better realize
the unfortunate part is they have many cases where in senior citizens homes, the senior citizens are coming up with AIDS.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mhm. We just had a case here in Chicago not too long ago, and the carrier was one of the younger orderlies, but he may have infected somebody, but then they were having sex amongst themselves too, and they had a case with six people at one time. Was diagnosed with it, and I just it's like, wow, really?
Right, but they're not only catching AIDS, but other STDs. When I worked in the hospital, we had a patient. I think she had come from a nursing home, and she was maybe like hitting her 80s, and she had syphilis of the mouth.
Wow.
You know, so it's not only AIDS, but, you know, and then someone had to ask, because that lady was immobile. She could barely, she was bedridden, and, you know, it was a point of someone just taking advantage of her.
Yeah. Because
I know an 80-year-old woman wasn't trying to have no oral sex with anybody, you know, so, you know, it's alarming.
Hell no, she
was. Right, but that's what I'm saying.
She was getting abused.
And, you know,
right,
in most states, if you do infect someone, you know, it's harder for them to even charge you or, you know, convict you of that because they have to prove that you knew you had it. And not only that, if you give someone a disease on purpose, you have to admit you caught the disease. So some people won't even want to bring it to the courts.
Mm-mm-mm.
And that's a crazy thing. Like, if you know someone is giving people HIV on purpose by law, or if people are giving anyone a disease on purpose by law in certain states, you can't even say anything because that's almost like slander. They will say to you, how do you know? So only
right.
a victim can report a person to the Department of Health. So even if you know someone is doing that, you really can't do anything about it by law.
But then I be on some strength. If they get into the courtroom and they actually get a case, they get raped all over again on the stand.
Right.
And not only that, the punishment in New York City, I know for a fact, the punishment is not that great. They're trying to change the law now because you recently had a case where a man gave it to his girlfriend on purpose, and I think they charged him with criminal negligent homicide, and he got like 6 months in jail.
See, they need to change the law,
only 6 months?
Too.
Only 6 months. Now, in Iowa, Iowa is completely different. Iowa, that's one of the few states they'll charge you with murder if you intentionally give someone HIV and they can prove it. But that's one of the few states where they do charge people.
Okay. Then all the states need to step up because guess what? Drug dealers with little 2 bags of marijuana get more than that time.
Well, you know, like some of the laws do need to be changed, but I don't know. But Ivy, you also have another book, Can I Live? Can you tell us a little bit about that book as well?
Well, Can I Live, it's a fiction book based on a man who's pursuing his dream of publishing his novel, Mr. HIV.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah, because, you know, I won't say I went through a lot, but it's a interesting story on what I went through to put the book out, you know, so I just decided to make a fiction book out of it because I think it would be an interesting story to tell, especially with
right.
my imagination and some of the facts. So that, and plus for legal reasons, it would be better just to say it's fiction, so I'm putting out, you know,
right.
a fiction novel and adding certain things to it.
Well, did you self-publish your book or you have a publisher?
Not self-publish my book. Anyone who's looking to self-publish, I would suggest they go, if you don't mind me saying, the website.
Go on.
It's createspace.com. And self-publishing can be very technical. And the great thing about createspace.com is that they make it simple. And they also put your book on Amazon and they put it in stores, too. So that's a great avenue for me now, because, you know, I could get my book in places like Barnes & Noble. These are places I don't know anyone, but because of this company I've connected with, my book is now available in stores and on the internet, and I can buy copies for myself to give out for promotional purposes.
Okay, so was that thrifty for you? You think it was better to do it your way, or,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Going because some people, like myself, I have a publisher, and I don't knock anybody for, you know, how they publish their books or anything like that, but for just me speaking for myself, it was, you know, easier for me to have a publisher because it was like a one-stop thing. Because I understand when you self-publish, you have to get an editor, a graphic designer. You know, it's just different things that you have to do opposed to when you have a publisher, because my publisher does the editing, got the graphic designer. You know, everything, like I said, everything is just one-stop, ISMB number, this and that, you know. So, you know, that's just for me.
For me personally, I preferred self-publishing because it was too hard to find a publisher who would be willing to publish such a book.
Mm-hmm.
So it became easier that way. And plus with the company that's associated with, they give me so many different avenues to sell the book. And then plus not only that, with a publisher, I feel like I have to depend on this person to like my book. Whereas with a self-publishing deal, I just put it out myself and that's all there is to it.
Right.
Okay, but Abby, I have a question. I hear a lot of complaints about Amazon and the amount that they take for each book. Economically, for you, do you think that was a better route to go now? Having put this one out and experienced this one, are you going that same route again?
Oh, yes to both questions, because now, see, people complain about the amount Amazon is taking. But I don't have to deal with distributors directly. I don't have to deal with invoices and all that other stuff. I don't have to store books here. And plus, it's when people order books on Amazon, all they really do with the company is they print it up and send it to the person, and I get a check later. So when I really think about it, I don't complain because I'm not really doing anything aside from marketing my book. They handling all the real work. All I'm doing is all I have to do is upload the document and the cover. They put out the book, and they give me a check. So I don't think people should complain because it can be much cheaper. It can be much more expensive at other places. It can be harder with other places. So I don't see the point in complaining because Amazon gives you the chance to reach a larger audience, and you're doing less work, but in the end they want more money. So it's a fair trade-off.
So you don't have any books that, you, like, if someone wants to order a book that you can autograph, they come straight from Amazon or Barnes & Noble?
So that's the one thing they don't do. I was trying to talk to them about that, but they don't have it set up there that way. Once you send them the files, they just print it directly from what you send them.
Okay, so you don't have books where you can, like, you don't have any books with you. So everybody gets your books from Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Right, but if someone did want a book from me autographed, they could contact me directly with their info, and they could just send me a money order, and I could send them the book.
Oh, okay. Okay, because how it's done for me, I order my books after they're, you know, finished, after they're printing, and I order a certain amount of books, and I have books on hand. Two of my books are on Amazon. And now I basically have my own website set up so I can sell my books directly from myself, opposed to splitting it with Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and, you know, the publisher. So once I get my books, I just, you know, sell them outright, you know, for the price that they cost. I get them for, I pay half of what they cost. And, you know, then I charge, you know, the full amount once I get them. That's how I do, you know, with my publisher. But one day, you know, not to say that I wouldn't try to self-publish, because I am thinking about it. I have another book that I am working on now, and I'm thinking about self-publishing. But, you know, it's just something that I'm thinking about. I'm doing a little research and, you know, different things like that. But I think it would be a challenge for me as well. Because since I've been in the literary business, I've learned a lot, you know. So I just might take that leap and just, you know, self-publish this will be my fifth book, and, you know, see how that goes.
Yeah, I would just say if you are going to self-publish, I would say to anybody out there who wants to self-publish, don't sign with any company that wants you to be in a contract with them for 1 year or anything like that. Because most self-publishing companies don't ask for that, and you want that freedom as a self-publisher. So I would just say try to avoid ones that ask for a commitment from you. Like with my website I deal with, if I got a deal right now, I could just sign with someone and that would be it. Or I could just stop publishing with them if I wanted to. So mm-hmm. I would just say that's the most important thing. Just don't be stuck in a self-publishing contract.
Right. Right.
Okay, well, we all got off on left subject. We got on left field on this one. I do that on my show, too. I be on everything, like, you know I respect your name. You know I respect your show. But let's bring us back to the topic at hand. It's about AIDS. And it's about HIV. What if you could tell anybody and everything about what you got to do, what wouldn't you do?
You mean far as?
As far as, like, sleeping with people, doing the, well, I mean, I know, we all know you're married. That's not a problem. But for people that are out there listening, what would you tell them not to do besides what we already all talked about? But it's got to be said because this is a real serious subject.
Well, I would just say don't think that it can't happen to you. I think that's the biggest issue is that people continually say, oh, it's not going to happen to me, so I'm not worried about it. Oh, I'm not going to catch HIV. I don't need to read about it. You know, I had a person once tell me that I should change the title of my book because if they saw my book, they would say to themselves, oh, I don't have HIV. Why would I want to read this? So I think people just need to, you know, just be realistic and admit that it can happen. Don't just say that. That's my biggest problem is that people choose to stay ignorant because they don't believe that it can happen. And then, unfortunately, when it does happen, how did this happen to me? So that's my biggest issue. Don't think that it can't happen because it can.
Right. That's the problem that people are having now. They think that, oh, it can't happen to me, and I'm going to keep going bareback. I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep doing that. It's not going to happen to me. Then they say, well, I know when a person have AIDS. You don't know. You cannot look at a person and tell whether they have AIDS. And trust and believe, people actually think that they can look at a person and tell that they have AIDS when you can't do that. I worked in the hospital for almost 20 years. And when I went into a patient's room, this girl was beautiful. I mean, she didn't look like she had AIDS, but she told me before I drew blood on her, she said, I have AIDS. I'm going to let you know that up front. I said, well, I'm glad you let me know because sometimes I wouldn't put my gloves on. I put my gloves on, and maybe about a couple of months later, she came back in the hospital. She was unrecognizable.
Mm. Yeah, that's how HIV... It can be. Sometimes right. It can just attack your body like that all of a sudden. It could just change you in different ways. A lot of people,
yeah,
they move their
hair
weight,
came out.
Their eyes start to pop out.
She was just a complete mess. And, I mean, when I went back into the room, the only way I knew it was her name. And I had to get out the room because I was about to cry in front of her. You know, she told me what had happened. Her baby's father was in jail. And he came home and, you know, he infected her. He died before she did. But, you know, he had told her that he was, you know, messing around. After he infected her, he told her that he had been messing with men in jail.
Oh, Lord. And, you know, a lot of people say that's a big issue, too, because, you know, some men go to jail and, you know, they did 6-7 years doing things with other men. And you don't get the best medical treatment in jail. Some guys in jail don't even get checkups, so.
Yeah. That's
you
true.
Definitely don't. You definitely don't get the best medical treatment in jail. Please, don't get me a start on that subject tonight.
Well, there's one jail out in California where they have a condom machine in one of the jails, and I was talking to a prison guard who was used to be a prison guard out in California, and I had told him, I said, you know, maybe they should start distributing condoms in jail. And he said, well, that would be like more promoting them, you know, it's okay for them to have sex. Well, I really would look at the fact they're going to do it anyway. So, therefore, give them the protection so they won't keep spreading those viruses. And
you know,
I did read in the paper that, you know, it's happening out in California somewhere.
But I think people won't, I'm sorry, I just want to say people won't take that much time to care about a prisoner anyway. But go ahead, Rhea.
No, what I was going to say, that's just like saying teach these teenagers abstinence instead of teaching them about birth control and protection. Excuse me, that's
right.
Stupid.
Right. That's true, though. That's what they should be teaching them.
Yeah,
it's
not realistic to teach them abstinence when there's so much sex around them on TV and the internet and everywhere else.
I mean, even if they do choose to go down that road, at least arm them with the information where they're making a complete choice. But just to tell somebody, this is what you're going to do.
Yo, they will put it on Facebook. I'm going to see my man tonight. What? You got a man, you 12. Sit your ass in the house. Where are their parents? Another story. Another story for another night. This is why me and Robin Lucinda get on that subject. I get on all those subjects because you're going to catch something sooner or later. Whether it be syphilis, CMD, whatever, HIV, you're going to catch something. Stop spreading your damn legs. And please, boys, please stop sticking and moving.
Stop what?
Right from the hood. You got to stop sticking and moving straight up.
I got moving.
That's all they do.
And I talk very candidly with man. I always have. And so I laugh because my 26-year-old will holler at me and say, I'm not talking about this with you, even to this day. And I will rant and rave and go through the house, and I'm walking right behind him. And I laugh because of that exact reason, because he I ain't talking to you. Well, you ain't got no choice, because ain't no damn daddy here, so you going to deal with me.
Hey, baby, be happy somebody taking time to talk to him.
Honey, please.
Exactly. Yeah, because some of these kids are not getting the lessons from home that they should be getting, and you hear something in the street, it's all together different. And I think these parents need to take the time to sit down and talk to their children at as early as elementary age, because it's happening in elementary schools as well.
Oh, darling,
so,
it's way before
I'm thinking 3 years
that.
Old they got to know. 3 years
it's
old now.
Way before that, because they were having sex in my they were, like, full blown out about a sixth grade, and I'm sitting there with my jaw slack, and I'm like, excuse me? And so we started talking at that point in regard to that. I think sometimes some of us are waiting too long, and you know, if there are any questions that they ask you, you may need to take that opportunity to give them a little bit more information than you would have given them, because you don't want them to hear it out there, because then it becomes like an adventure to them.
Then, and right. They get false information. I'm sure there's many false myths on how you cannot catch HIV, so they'll end up believing the false stuff they hear on the streets because they're not getting the real information at home.
That's the problem. That is the problem right there. They're not getting the correct information. They just run the streets because the parents ain't doing what they got to do. Shit going on. They ain't worried about nobody, nothing. And these little kids, that's the problem. That's going to be the problem for the 2000. I'm trying to tell you something. We in 2010. Yeah. Watch what happens in 2020.
Wow.
Everybody going
to
be
very scared to see that because everything is just happening so fast. You know, and things are just, I mean, it's just like a whirlpool, you know,
okay,
just really quick and fast.
We try to educate them to prevent it. It's education is prevention, as just like Lucinda said. We try to educate them, but if their parents aren't doing what they got to do and they busy running the streets, who going to have the babies?
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break.
When man turned 12, well, my daughter was different. I had to handle my males different. I have one daughter and three sons. When each of my sons turned 12, I sat and I had the talk with them. And I would go to their pediatrician, and I would get her medical book. And I would come back and I would show them pictures of warts and ulcers and all this and all kind of disease and this, that, and the other. And that particular one, my 26-year-old, who I believe is a big, but I'm not going to say it because my sister said he may have grown up. But anyway, I had to put him in a headlock because he wouldn't look at it. Oh, you're going to look at this. Now, when he got to high school, he brought me one of his friends and he said, Mama, show him the book. Mama, you need to show him the book. And I was so busy laughing because I'm like, okay, first of all, it's not my book. Second of all, it's not my child. I can't do to him what I did to you. Then third of all, I did have a talk with the young man. And then I did have a talk with his mom. And I told her, if he's out here and not protecting himself, you need to know it. And so since it was brought to my attention, I'm bringing it to your attention. You know, mm-hmm. But that's something. I believe information is power.
Yes,
I believe information is going to give you where you make your choices. And that's one of the things that I think, because I know here in Chicago, that's one of the ages where HIV is on the extreme rise, teenagers. I don't know if it's nationwide, but there's a school here in Chicago, a high school here in Chicago, and over 50% of the students in there had AIDS at one time. Well, HIV at one time. I'm not going to say AIDS. They had HIV at one time because they were passing it through the school. And I'm sitting here like, are you serious? And this is a Chicago public high school.
That's a sin. But we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and tears here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Right on.
Marvin Gaye, What's Going On? And what is going on is we're talking about HIV with I.B. Freeman. And if you have any questions or comments, the call-in number is 646-652-2877. Okay. So, I.B. Freeman, what would you say to a classroom of children maybe age 9 years old about HIV?
Wow, that's a tough one. Well, I would say that it's something you need to know about because it can help you when you're an adult, just like anything you learn in school,
mm-hmm.
and that it's very important. And I would most importantly say, if a person does have HIV, they're not a bad person. They just have a disease that's going to affect them over a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best way I could put it without, you know, scaring them or, you know, I think too many people, when we hear the word HIV, they think, oh, you're going to die tomorrow or you're a bad person. No, you're not a bad person. And some people don't even see AIDS as a terminal disease. To them, it's more of a chronic disease.
But eventually it will consume you.
That's true.
Right, it will consume you, but you can to have medication that will keep you living better as if you had cancer, because cancer, once it's terminal, that's it. There's no medication or no, you know, once they tell you that you're close to the time of you leaving here, that's what's going to happen. There's not no exact date, but if the doctor gave you 6 months, trust and believe, within those six months, you will be, you know, ready to leave. So I heard Farrakhan say that a general had went to a scientist and asked him to create the HIV virus. Is that a fact, or did you hear anything like that?
Well, I've heard a lot of things about it. I've heard a lot of things as far as it being created within a lab. You know, some people say it was created for population control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people even said that HIV is related to the Tuskegee experiment, because
exactly.
A lot of the symptoms of HIV and AIDS are also found in syphilis.
Mm-hmm.
So some people believe that it was a government conspiracy. I'm sorry?
Right, but you could be cured of syphilis. You know, they had penicillin to cure that. But with the AIDS, there's no cure from the medication. It just basically helps your body to cope with it. But,
right.
You know, they say they have strains of syphilis and gonorrhea now that penicillin can't cure. But, you know, at one point you could cure syphilis and gonorrhea, those, you know, STDs that were before AIDS came along and these different diseases that, you know, came along. And I'm just wondering, because they also said that it had started in Africa. The rumor was that a man had ate a monkey that had the virus. But, you know, I don't think that we will ever really know where it came from or how it got here. But one thing for certain, two things are for sure, it's here. And it's wreaking havoc everywhere.
And it's also,
you know,
not to cut you off, but it was also documented that one of the very first people to ever be on record with AIDS was a gay male stewardess from San Francisco. And
mm-hmm.
he actually spread the virus, because by working as a stewardess, he went around the country having sex with different men.
Wow.
And spread it on to them. That was it. That was also in the HBO movie The Band Played On. It's been documented.
Right, I saw that. Uh-huh.
So that's just another theory on how it all got started.
That sounds believable, but then it would have to be, how did he get it? You see what I'm saying? Where did he get it from?
I understand. Well, maybe then people could say diseases evolved from other things, so maybe it was another disease that evolved into this.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a number of factors. I mean, but I don't think the issue of why or how is more as important as, you know, what to do
right,
now is here.
Right, that it's here. Right, right. That's what I said, because, you know, it's like the cat's out of the bag. and, you know, people are, you know, dying from it or, you know, spreading it here and there. And, you know, it's really dreadful. It's a very dreadful disease. And anybody who suffers from it or, you know, has it, you know, has my sympathy. But, like, I'm going to always, always protect myself. And I wish that, you know, people would be a little bit more cautious with their own health and their own, you know, their own being, because you never know. And you just can't say that it's not going to happen to me. You can't say that, you know.
But I think people would rather, they rather believe that they can tell than face the reality of what it is. So it's easier to act like, sometimes it's easier to act like something doesn't exist than to admit it does exist.
Right, that is true.
And then you have a lot of people that take that position of you can't have from it. Eventually everybody's going to get it, so why don't I enjoy it? I mean, you know, so they don't do those added things that they should do for precaution and this, that, and the other. And I know I'm just one of them people. I just don't understand that if you're going to be out here doing it. Because I know that's one thing, just like cancer. I hope that I never, ever get either one of those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cancer is very dreadful, too.
And it just has a tear. Not only does it have a tear on you physically, but it could tear on you mentally, too.
Right. And then the
exactly.
people that, the people in your circle, like your family members, your friends, everybody is affected by it, but you are the one who is suffering from it. So it not only you are going through those physical, mental changes, you know, people who love you and care about you are going through the same thing. Because I know even when, you know, when my children are sick, you know, I get emotional, you know, so I couldn't even imagine if they had AIDS or, you know, cancer, because my mom died from cancer this month on the 11th. It'll be 16 years that she died from, and just watching her, you know, go through that, it was, you know, it was just, you know, it's something I would never, ever want to go through again. And I love my mom, and I miss her dearly, but, you know, she suffered, and being on that chemo and radiation is nothing nice. Especially, even the chemo made my mother so sick until I was sick. That's how bad, you know, it had did her. And she only took a couple of the treatments because she couldn't take it. It made her really sick. The radiation took her hair out, you know, so.
And then the chemo breaks you all the way down to your barest form before you
mm-hmm.
can start to heal back. I do have a question. Since Africa was brought up, Abby, have you thought or had any discussions or anything on what, because that is like the, one of the greatest regions, I think, suffering from that on all levels. Have you thought or had any discussions on what could possibly be done to start minimizing those numbers?
Well, the part of the problem is that in certain parts of Africa, certain people cannot afford watches or clocks,
okay.
and condoms are very expensive. Now, with that being said, you have to take HIV at a certain time, and if the people of Africa can't afford a watch or a clock, they don't know what time to take their medicine.
Okay.
So even if they receive free medicine from places, they don't know what time to take the medicine, and that could affect their body too. And then also, the economy really has to be fixed in Africa, because technically, to pay for a condom in Africa, a person working out there has to save up 1 week's pay just to buy one condom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so a lot of times people in Africa, they don't buy condoms because they're just too expensive. So
wow,
I think more countries need
pay?
To chip in. What's up?
No,
the way the economy is with
pay
the inflation
to...
and then the lack of jobs and, you know, the poverty, and then you got the condoms at the high price, it's just too much for people to pay for.
Wow.
So more
I couldn't even imagine having something that is really that necessary, having to pay that kind of money for.
Right.
And it's a must, but it's so much to spend on it, you know, they'd rather, I guess, go without it.
Wow. Well, I know for a while I had heard that they were getting, a lot of the children were getting AIDS or HIV because the men were being told that if they have sex with babies, they would, it would
right.
cure them.
The virus, yeah.
Wow, that's just sick.
Right. And they
that,
were raping
that stuff,
young
that stuff
girls
hurt my heart when I heard
well.
That. I'm like, and I saw a documentary on a PBS station, and they never came right out and said how this child, you know, how, well, it was like these three children and how they had contracted it. But then later on another program, they talked about that part that I just told you about, and I couldn't imagine that. I can't even imagine that kind of desperation. But to learn that condoms are that expensive for them, it's almost, you got to fail.
Yeah, because it's just out your reach. There's nothing you could do about it.
Wow.
No. Well, actually, I was looking up on the net now. I'm trying to see the research, see exactly the prices, because it's just inflation can cause those kind of problems. So, you know, and not only inflation, but low pay, too. That makes it even worse. And then especially when you have things like prostitution and things like that, that just adds a whole bunch of other elements to it. That's why it's also a big problem in places like Brazil and India.
Wow. Well, that's sad, because I also had seen a documentary about, you know, the men were raping the babies over in Africa, and this one baby, I think the baby was maybe about 9 or 10 months old. And, oh, my God, it tears me apart to even tell this story, but the baby had been raped, and insides of the baby was just destroyed. I think the baby was maybe about 10 months old, because they believed that, you know, having sex with a virgin or a young child will relieve them of the virus. And my thing is, if somebody seen that it didn't relieve them of it, they should, you know, cut that mess out.
Well, I hope we get a lot of time in jail. I hope we get life,
yeah,
for that matter.
But in some places like that, they don't lock the people up. That's things that they believe, and they let them get away with it. You know, so it's just different strokes for different folks. But I'm just saying, it's a shame that, you know, people have to suffer because of something that someone else did, you know, as far as like having sex or being promiscuous and getting the virus, and then, you know, like I had mentioned earlier, you being vengeful and vindictive and want to give it to everybody that comes along.
But I think sometimes anger can push people to do things that are just not logical. Not to
right,
justify
that's,
what
that's,
they're doing, but I think they're fueled on that.
Right, that's true. That's true. It's just basically about them being angry and wanting to strike out, and, you know, that's how they do. But, you know, like I said, a person needs to get help. Let all the people know that they had the you know, sex with, that, you know, I have this virus and maybe you need to go get checked out, you know, instead of, you know, spreading all that venom all over the place.
No, yeah, people
well,
are out there trying to. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Rio.
I was going to say, I know here in Chicago, when HIV first started becoming known to the public, I know it was in the 80s, there was a prostitute. I lived around the corner from one of the biggest strips in Chicago, right off 47th Street. And there was a prostitute, and her name was Chocolate something, whatever the case was. They actually had her on a film, but I don't, a documentary or something, but they didn't, it wasn't as widespread as some of the other ones. But she was upset because she had, okay, in her mind, she had to prostitute in order to survive, and what she had to do caused her to get sick and was going to take her life. And she was having sex with, you know, guys unprotected and everything else. We saw them finally come and arrest her, and how they, you know, literally they threw this, like, net over her and put her in back of one of the trucks, almost like a dog catcher truck, because, and it was disease control. But they had to come get her out of that abandoned building, and she was infecting people left and right.
And they, when they arrest people like that, they have to put something over their face and their mouth, because God forbid if somebody with HIV spit on
you. They did. They threw this thing. It looked like a net on the outside, but it looked like it had like a plastic, you know, like one side was maybe plastic and the other side was net. And then they used what almost looked like the things they use in swimming pools to pick people. And that's how they put her in there. They never got within a certain radius of her at all.
Wow. Because
the slightest thing like that could touch you, and it could just cause all kinds of havoc.
Well, I never heard that it could be spread through saliva, but I know blood, it definitely could be spread through blood and semen. But they haven't, last time I heard that it hasn't been proven that you can get it from kissing or, you know, exchanging saliva. Of the mouth.
Well, you know my issue with that. Okay, the biggest issue I have with that is this. Because our mouth stay at the level that it stays at, and they talk about how our mouth can easily affect and this, that, and the other. If you have teeth issues, a lot of times you have blood issues because there's blood involved in it. Especially if you have bleeding gums. So I've never, and call me a whatever, but I've never thought that you can't spread it through kissing, and nor can you spread it through saliva, because blood is already mixed up in there, especially if you have any teeth issues.
Right. If you have your diarrhea of the gums or something like that, yes, you can. But I'm just saying, I've never heard of anybody catching it by, you know, saliva in the mouth. But like I also mentioned, if you just had surgery in your mouth or something like that where blood is in your mouth and it's seeping into that saliva, then you can catch it because it was a dentist who was spreading HIV like that.
And then there was also a case in Texas where, you know, HIV positive person spit on a cop. I think they received 40 years for that. Because they consider if you HIV positive and you spit on someone, that's considered biochemical warfare.
Right. Wow. Well, yeah. So you definitely, you know, have to be careful when you come in contact with the person that has HIV. But not to say that you can't, you know, talk to them face to face and, you know, give them a handshake or a hug or something like that, because you can't get it from giving somebody a hug or shaking their hand, not unless they have blood on it or semen or, you know, but, you know, because, you know, people, they're already going to be ostracized. And then, you know, when you walking up to them, you're acting like, you know, especially if it's a friend of somebody, you know, if your friend contracted it, and all of a sudden you don't want to shake their hand or give them a hug, that's, you know, that's another terrible blow for them to have to suffer. Well, we used to be friends, and you don't even want to shake my hand anymore, you know. So I don't know, but I've seen, since working in the hospital, I've seen people come and be in the hospital, then they come back, and then they die, they come back. This one guy, he was a young guy. He had the virus. The first time he came, he was, you know, like I said, you couldn't tell that anything was wrong with him. He went and he came back, he was blind. You know, so it does all kind of things to your system and, you know, causes all kind of different breakdowns in your body because your immune system is gone. That's what the virus does. It attacks your immune system, and once that's done, you know, you can't fight off any type of illnesses or different things. Like, people, basically, they don't die from the virus itself. They die from what the virus does to them. Like, if you get cancer or something like that, that's what kills you.
Or like a lot of times it's like pneumonia. You know, you can have AIDS, but then if you catch pneumonia, the pneumonia is what would kill you.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
that's why they have
knew.
Said for that long time. Anytime they say that a Hollywood person died from pneumonia, it was AIDS. Because,
yeah.
You know
like
what I'm saying? They were saying saying that for, because that was what they always said was that they
right.
died from pneumonia.
Right.
Right. Yeah, and they usually say the person died from pneumonia and they had AIDS.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's an author who died, but I don't want to say his name, but it was quite suddenly, so I don't know.
Oh, some people even speculated like that about a person like Will Chamberlain, because he said he had sex with over 50,000 women. So when people say he died from a heart attack, when he said he died from a heart attack, people are like, well, did he really die from a heart attack or did he have something?
Oh, is Will Chamberlain dead?
Yeah, Will Chamberlain had a heart attack.
Oh, I didn't even know he was dead. Wow, well, maybe, I don't I'm far behind the time, but I didn't know he was dead. But I did hear that he had sex with all these women, supposed to be in thousands or whatever, but I don't know. Maybe it caught up with him.
Yeah, I mean, you got sex with 50,000 women. Eventually, you catching 2 or 3 STDs, if only that many.
Right. And see, people think that, you know, because they got away with having sex with so many women, you know, they can't never get anything. But it'll take is that next time, that one woman, and you be down for the count.
Next time could be the last time.
Yep. That's true. Well,
this
we
is a very
left.
Informative show, and like I
yeah.
said before, Abby, you have a lot of facts, and they just run, and it, sometimes it's very interesting hearing you give
yes.
them. And I did, and I've learned more than something tonight, and I thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank
yeah,
you for
I
having
thank
me.
You too. Thank you for coming on, and you're going to have to come back again when your next book come out, or just come back and we'll talk some more about AIDS or, you know, whatever it is we have in this discussion. Rhea, you want to tell the listeners what our next show is about?
Wait a minute, I dropped my post. No. Our next show is about how to mend a broken heart. And that's
right,
on the 15th.
We're going to be discussing that because I had my heart broke, but I got over it. But, you know, we're going to be discussing that. And if you want to come back and be on to discuss that with us, I'd be, not to say that you had your heart broke, but you may know someone who had their heart broken, you know, like want to share a story with us or whatever. But I want to tell everybody, thanks for coming in and listening, and thank you, Ivy Wise. Thank you, Rhea. Let's give a shout out to the chat room, Boyd and Lucinda, guest 54828, Radio Flyer. Lisa was in the chat room.
Elizabeth was in the chat room.
Yeah, Lisa Perry was in the chat room. And anybody else who dropped in the chat room and dropped out, I'd like to say thank you for coming on. And the flies on the wall, thank you for listening.
And I did list where you could purchase Mr. HIV from Amazon.com. I listed that link in the chat room, as well as how to contact Mr. IV Freeman on Facebook.
Right. He also has a blog talk show. When does your show air, IV?
Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 p.m.
Okay. All right. So you heard that Mr. IV's show airs from on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10 p.m. That's the I.B. Freeman Show at Blog Talk Radio. Rita, you have any last words?
No, just thank you. And it was, like I said, this was a very good show.
Right.
I'm going to make my son listen to the playback.
Okay. I.B., you have any last closing remarks?
And I just want to thank everyone for having me on the show. I want to thank everyone for listening or anyone who's bought my book. And just want to tell people to make sure they protect themselves.
Okay. All right. With that being said, I want to say good night to everybody and hope everybody have a nice weekend. See you guys next week. Thank you.
Yeah, good night, too.
Good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.